What I've been thinking about lately, I've thought a lot about the life of Joseph. I've been reading about him, and what a remarkable believer, a remarkable man that loved God. And I've been thinking about with my life and all of us, at times in our lives, we always come to a crossroads, no matter things that happen. And then what do you do when things come up? You know, where does your mind go? And it got me thinking, you know, about Joseph for a while now. So if you go to Genesis chapter 37, I'm not going to go through every single thing, just some points. But Joseph certainly came across many crossroads in his life as things changed. And in Genesis 37, and in verse 1, it says, "And Jacob lived in the land where his father had sojourned, in the land of Canaan. And there the records of the generations of Jacob. And Joseph, when 17 years of age, was pasturing the flock with his brothers while he was still a youth, along with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought back a bad report about them to their father." So he kind of told on them. And Israel loved Joseph more than all his sons, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a tunic. And his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, and so they hated him, and they could not speak to him on friendly terms. You know, Joseph, 17 years of age, I mean, he definitely had a relationship with his father and, you know, with his brothers, I guess. But, you know, his own family, his brothers hated him. And from that point on, we all know what, you know, what they did to him. I mean, they saw the love that their father had for him, and they saw it. I can't imagine hating your brother to the point that these guys did. And we all know it continued in verse 21. Well, verse 18, it says, you know, they saw, they were together, and they saw Joseph coming. And when they saw him from a distance, and before he came close to them, they plotted against him to put him to death. Imagine that. Their brothers plotted against him to kill him. And verse 19, and they said to one another, "Here comes this dreamer. And now then, come and let us kill him and throw him into the pit. And we will say a wild beast devoured him. And then let us see what will become of his dreams." Because we all know he had that dream, and that they were going to serve him. And verse 21, but Reuben heard this and rescued him out of their hands and said, "Let us not take his life." And Reuben further said to them, "Shed no blood, throw him into the pit that is in the wilderness, but do not lay hands on him, that he might rescue him out of their hands to restore him to his father." At least Reuben wanted to give him back. And Reuben further said to them, well, verse 23, so it came about when Joseph reached his brothers, they stripped him out of his tunic, the very colored tunic that was on him, and they took him and threw him into the pit. And the pit was empty without any water in it. And then they sat down and ate and, you know, raised their eyes. And behold, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites was coming from Gilead with their camels bearing aromatic gum and balm and myrrh, and on their way down to Egypt. And Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is it for us to kill our brother and cover up his blood? Let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him, for he is our brother, our own flesh." And the rest of the brothers listened to him. Imagine that. Let's just not kill him, but we'll sell him. And here's Judah. He was in the Christ line, you know, which is amazing. But it to me, you know, what Joseph endured, being thrown into the pit while his brothers are plotting, and what was he thinking? You know, his knowing his brothers hated him so much, to the fact that they wanted to kill him. and they stripped him of what he had, and then just kind of disposed him. And then they sell him off to these people, and he goes down and he goes into, gets sold to the Ishmaelites, and then he gets sold into Potiphar's house. And he was the servant there. And Joseph, it always says the Lord was with him throughout all these things. It never shows Joseph complaining or why this happened to me. You know, obviously it had to be tumultuous, you know, the turmoil going through his head of what he was going through, being separated from the father and the mother that he loved, and being sold. And now he's a servant in Potiphar's house. And then we know what Potiphar's wife goes to betray him and wants him, and he will not betray his master. And she cries rape, and he gets thrown into a dungeon. And we'll pick it up again in chapter 39. And in chapter 39, he's taken out of Potiphar's house, and he's thrown into the prison there. And verse 21, it says, but the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness or mercy to him and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. You know, the whole time that he's going through this whole ordeal of his life, and remember, started at 17 years old, that the Lord continued to show mercy to him, and Joseph continued to do the best that he could, whether when he was in Potiphar's house and even with the jailer, how he did the best job that he could do for Potiphar and was in second command. And then he gets betrayed unfairly and gets thrown into a prison, which is not like the prisons we have today, but these dungeons couldn't have been pleasant. And now he's in favor with the head jailer. And verse 22, the chief jailer committed to Joseph's charge all the prisoners who were in the jail, so that whatever was done there, he was responsible for it. Now he's like a head trustee, in charge of all the things there, but he's still in prison. He's still in a dungeon. It's not like he's out of the circumstance that he's in. And verse 23, the chief jailer did not supervise anything under Joseph's charge because the Lord Yahweh was with him, and whatever he did, Yahweh made it to prosper. Even in that dire circumstance that he was in, the Lord prospered him in whatever he was doing. And now Joseph, who's an honorable man, a man of great faith, here he is taking care of all these other prisoners, and he didn't have the oversight of a head jailer on top of him. And then we know that he has the cupbearer and the other guy, the baker, that come and they get thrown in prison with him, and he was able to interpret their dreams. And go to chapter 40, and in verse 23, remember, he interprets their dreams. And verse 20, it says, thus it came about on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, and he made a feast for all his servants. And he lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among the servants. And he restored the chief cupbearer to his office, and he put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, just as Joseph had interpreted to them. But yet, and remember, he told them, don't forget about me. But yet, chapter verse 23, it says the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot about him. So here's another crossroads in life. He knew he was forgotten again. But yet Joseph's response, he kept doing the best that he could do. And God was with him. God showed him great mercy. And God gave him the strength to get through whatever circumstance he was in. Every crossroads that Joseph came up against, he did it God's way. He did the best he could and did it God's way. And God rewarded him in every circumstance, in the circumstances of his life. He wasn't removed out of the prison, but he was elevated in this situation to the best that it could possibly be for his life. And then Joseph has the dream. Well, Pharaoh has verse chapter 41. Pharaoh has that dream of verse one. It happened at the end of 2 full years. Now 2 years go by. So the cupbearer forgot about him, and now another 2 years. So Joseph's got to be in his 20s. And here it has Pharaoh has a dream, and behold, he was standing by the Nile. And from the Nile, there came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and grazed in the marshland. And then 7 other cows came up from the Nile, ugly and gaunt, and they stood on the other side of the bank of the Nile. And he knows we have this dream. And then when all of Pharaoh's people couldn't interpret the dream, the cupbearer remembers, oh, you know, there was a guy I was with in prison, and he interpreted the dream correctly. And Joseph gets brought before Pharaoh. And in verse 9, it says, then the chief cupbearer spoke to Pharaoh, saying, I would make mention today of my own offense. And Pharaoh was furious with his servants, and he put me in confinement to the house of the captain of the bodyguard, both me and the chief baker. And we had a dream on the same night, he and I, and each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his dream. And now a Hebrew youth that was with us there, a servant of the captain of the bodyguard, and we told him of our dreams, and he interpreted each according to our dream. And just as he interpreted for us, that's how it happened. And he restored me in my office, but he hanged him. Then Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. And then Pharaoh told him, tell me my dream right from the beginning, the whole dream. Pharaoh didn't even tell him what the dream was, but he had Joseph tell him everything. And Joseph interpreted what needed to be done. God gave him what he needed. And it turns out that he sets all of Egypt up for the 7 years of feast, the 7 years of abundance, and then the 7 years of famine. And in verse 32, and then he repeated now as for the repeating of the dream to Pharaoh, it means that the matter was determined by God, and God will quickly bring it about. And verse 38, it says, Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is the divine spirit? So Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has informed you of all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you are. And you shall be over my house, and according to your command, all my people shall do homage. Only in the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you up over all the land of Egypt. And then Pharaoh took off his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and clothed him in the garments of fine linen, and put the gold necklace around his neck. And he had him ride in his second chariot, and they proclaimed before him, bow the knee, and he set him over all the land of Egypt. And moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, though I am Pharaoh, yet without your permission, no one shall raise his hand or set foot in all the land of Egypt. And then Pharaoh named Joseph Zelpenath, and he gave him Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, as his wife. And Joseph went forth over the land of Egypt. And now Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. So look at the span of his life. 17 years old, his brothers take him and get thrown him in the pit. And from 17 on, and now at age 30, he's over the chief, only second in command of all the land of Egypt. But all that time, that he spent in being sold to the Ishmaelites, being in the pit, being sold in the Potiphar's house, being betrayed again by there, being forgotten in the prison by the cupbearer, then being restored. And now at age 30, he's in over all of Egypt, the ruler over all of Egypt, just under Pharaoh. And Pharaoh knew that God was working in this man, because nobody could do what he did. And what a remarkable life. And Joseph kept it straight under such dire circumstances. What a remarkable man. And then his brothers, with the famine, his brothers come and they have to buy the thing. And he sees his brothers and they didn't recognize him. And we know all that goes on. And in chapter 45, after he does the whole thing with his brothers and he gets Benjamin to come back, his brother. And then in chapter 45, after he makes himself known to his brothers, chapter 45, verse 1, it says, then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him. And he cried, have everyone go out from me. So there was no man with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. He took everybody out but his brothers, and he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it and the household of Pharaoh heard it. Imagine the depth of emotion in his life to see his brothers that sold him, that hated him, that wanted to kill him and separated him from his family, those that he loved. Imagine the emotion seeing them after all these years, and they didn't recognize him, and he goes to this thing, he wept, and the emotion in his life was so loud that all of Pharaoh's household saw it and heard it, rather. And then he wept so loudly in verse 3, then Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. How sad, you know. And his first thing was, I am Joseph. Is my father alive? To know from the age 17 all the way through 30, to not know if your father is alive or anything. I mean, what emotion. And to know that they couldn't answer him and they were dismayed that they actually saw him. Then verse 4, and then Joseph said to his brothers, please come closer to me. And they came closer and he said, I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. Now don't be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. Imagine that. He took the burden off his brothers, the guilt, the unbelievable burden that they put on, that they did, the horrible sin that they did against Joseph. And he took it from them and said, don't be angry with yourselves. Don't be grieved with yourselves, for God had a purpose in mind for my life. And he was able to save all those people. He brought his father. His father came, all the people came, and they lived in the land of Goshen. They had favor, they had food, he was reunited with his whole family. And he didn't blame his brothers. And he took that burden from them. He didn't even want them to carry that burden in their heart. And all these I call it crossroads, but all these things that happened in his life, he gave it to God. And what a man he was. And yet he wasn't even in the price line. It was Judah. And how God worked in his life is just absolutely remarkable, to bring him through every period in his life. And what a lesson. You know, what a life. And how I was thinking, how we come up across things in our lives. I was talking to someone the other day extensively, and things aren't going so hot for her. It's really hard. And she asked me this question. She goes, "Why is God punishing me?" And I immediately told her, I said, "God is not the one that punishes." You know, she goes, "All these things are happening in my life. And, you know, these," she doesn't understand. And she reminded me not only of Joseph, too, of the different crossroads in his life and Joseph's response, but also in Psalm 77. She knows about God. She believes there is a God. She doesn't understand God at all. And in Psalm 77, this is a Psalm of Asaph, but it's a prophet. It says, verse 1, "My voice rises to God, and I will cry aloud. My voice rises to God, and he will hear me. In the day of my trouble, I sought the Lord. In the night, my hand was stretched out without weariness, but my soul refused to be comforted. For when I remember God, then I was disturbed. And when I sigh, then my spirit grows faint. You have held my eyelids open. I am so troubled that I cannot speak. I have considered the days of old, the years of long ago. I will remember my song in the night. I will meditate with my heart, and my spirit ponders. Will the Lord reject forever? And will he never be favorable again? Has his loving kindness ceased forever? And has his promise come to an end forever? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Or has he in anger withdrawn his compassion?" Sounded, you know, the person I was talking to, she goes, why has God been punishing me? What have I done wrong? And her response was not like Joseph when all these terrible things happened to him. Her response was, "God is doing this to me. God is punishing me." And like this prophet, he couldn't be comforted. Has God forgotten me? Has God forsaken me? Has he withdrawn his compassion? Obviously, this man, he came across these things in his life. And his response was, has he forgotten me? But then verse 10, he says, "Then I said, that is my grief. This is my problem. And here it is, that the right hand of the Most High has changed." He recognized his problem. He thought the right hand of the Most High has changed. God has changed in his dealing with me. And that he realized was his problem. He goes, verse 11, "Then I shall remember the deeds of Yahweh. Surely I will remember your wonders of old. I will meditate on all your work and think on your deeds. Your way, O God, is holy. What God is great like our God? You are the God who works wonders. You have made known your strength among the people. You have by your power redeemed your people, the sons of Jacob and Joseph." You know, Joseph saved his whole household, and he was married to an Egyptian woman and had children. And the children, Manasseh and Ephraim, they prospered and were saved. All of his household was saved because of Joseph's response when he came across these things in life. And this is what the problem is with all of us, too. Is that sometimes we forget that we think all of a sudden that God's dealing with us differently, that God has all of a sudden withdrawn his compassion to us or withdrawn his goodness to us or his mercies, and we start blaming him. And we forget of all that he has brought us through. We forget that God doesn't change. And go to James chapter 1. Hebrews, James chapter 1, and in verse 17, it says, "Every good thing given and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shift or change of shadow or shifting shadow. There is no change, no variation with God. In the exercise of his will, he brought us forth by the word of truth so that we would be the kind of the first fruits among his creation. This you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. You've got to keep it. We've got to keep it right. There's no changing with God. There's no shadow of differences with God. There's no variations of how he treats us all. He gave his son for the entire world. And he loved us first, even when we didn't love him. In Malachi chapter 3. I just thought these were some just good remembrances, good things to keep in mind and remember when times get really changing in our life, when we go through all these different things of life. In Malachi chapter 3, and in verse 6, it says, "For I, the Lord Yahweh, do not change. Therefore, you sons of Jacob are not consumed." He doesn't change. God doesn't change. He made a covenant. He made a promise. And that's why they weren't consumed. You know, verse 7, "From the days of your fathers, you have turned aside from my statutes and have not kept them. Return to me and I will return to you. But you say, how shall we return?" We have to put God first. We have to give him our worship, our love. But God doesn't change. He's always there. In Numbers chapter 23. Numbers chapter 23. And we know this whole thing of Balaam with Barak. And in verse 19, it says, "God is not a man that he should lie, nor the son of man that he should repent. Has he said, and will he not do it? Or has he spoken, and will he not make it good?" I mean, that's the bottom line. God is not us. God is not mortal. He's not us that we have variations in life. We change in life. We think stupid things sometimes. We're unstable at times. But that's not God. He's not a man like us. He made us. He knows how fragile we are. But he's not us. There's no variation with God. There's no changing with him. In Psalm 119. Psalm 119 and in verse 89. It says, "Forever, O Yahweh, your word is settled in heaven." Verse 90, "Your faithfulness continues throughout all generations. You establish the earth and it stands." Your faithfulness, it's throughout all generations, not just some, but every generation, every age. God is faithful throughout it all. In Isaiah chapter 40. Chapter 40 and in verse 8, it says, "The grass withers, the flower fades, but the word of our God stands forever. All that he has said, all his promises, they will stand." In verse 27, it says, "Why do you say, O Jacob, and assert, O Israel, my way is hidden from Yahweh, and that justice due me escapes from the notice of my God? Don't you know, and have you not heard? The everlasting God, Yahweh, the creator of the ends of the earth, he doesn't get weary or tired. His understanding is inscrutable. He gives strength to the weary, and to him who lacks might, he increases power. Though youth can grow weary and tired, and vigorous young men can stumble badly, yet those who wait for the Lord, Yahweh, they will gain strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired, and they will walk and not become weary. God doesn't change. He gives us the strength we need to get through everything in our lives, every good thing, every bad thing, everything in our lives. He gives us the strength. We may not be taken like Joseph wasn't taken out of the pit, and he went through the pit. He went through the dungeon. He went through all those horrible things, and yet he prospered his way in everything that he did. And Joseph thrived, and God worked within his life. And here the same thing, to think that what that prophet, my infirmity is that I'm thinking that the right hand of God has changed towards me. And it's just not true. And here, so many where we see God's faithfulness is always the same. God's endurance with us, God's long suffering with us, God's patience with us is always there. In Psalm 33, Psalm 33 and in verse 11, it says, the counsel of Yahweh stands forever. The plans of his heart are from generation to generation. Blessed is the nation whose God is Yahweh, and the people whom he has chosen for his own inheritance. His heart, his plans of his heart has been laid out in his word, and it doesn't change. It is from generation to generation, from me to my children, to my grandchildren, to my great-grandchildren, and so on and so on. And before us, all the people, his heart has been laid out and it hasn't changed from generation to generation. He has loved man and he has made a way for man, and his plans have been laid out, and he doesn't give us different things. His plan of salvation has been secured throughout the whole time. He gave his son. In Hebrews chapter 6, and in verse 17, it says, in the same way, God, desiring even more to show to the heirs of promise his unchangeableness of his purpose, he interposed with an oath, so that by two unchangeable things in which it is impossible for God to lie, we who have taken refuge would have strong encouragement to take hold of that hope that is set before us. And the hope that we have is an anchor of the soul, a hope both sure and steadfast, to one which enters into the veil, where Jesus has entered as the forerunner for us. And that God is unchangeable in his plan of salvation. God has given us a hope that has not changed. There's no changing within God. He has placed things before us, and he's given us the anchor that we need so that we can stay right on course with his plans and be saved and be redeemed and be and have new bodies and have eternity with God. But he, even throughout all this, all of our lives, he has been clear. He has made his ways known, and he has not changed in his faithfulness and his love towards us. And in Isaiah, we'll close there. Isaiah 49. There's so many places in the word that we can go to, but we'll just go to these few. In chapter 49 and in verse 15, can a woman forget her nursing child and have no compassion on the son of her womb? And yes, we have seen that she can. There are people that can forget about their children. But even these they may forget, but I will not forget you. Behold, I have inscribed you on the palms of my hands, and your walls are continually before me. God will never forget about us. God has always kept us in the forefront. We are the apple of his eye. God has never, it is not possible for him to forget us. He's not a man that he would lie. He has always had us. His inheritance, his portion is us. We are his inheritance to him. We are his portion. And I always think of that great song, "How great is thy faithfulness. Oh God, my Father, there's no shadow of turning with thee. As thou hast been, thou forever will be." And in some of the hardest times of my life, I have always thought of that. And that has what has carried me through, to know that God does not change. He loves me and he will not forsake me. He will not fail me. And we hear it every time in the manifestations, over and over, he repeats how much he loves us. He doesn't forget about us. His right hand has not changed. He is not changing in the way he deals with us. And I just find such great comfort in that. So that's what I wanted to share.